The time has come to get ready for the 2022 World Cup. And what better way to prepare than by revisiting the World Cup's most amazing goals? I'm Brian Phillips. I'm making a podcast about the history of the Men's World Cup, told through the stories of 22 iconic goals. The show's called 22 Goals. It's out now on the Ringer Podcast Network, and we're having so much fun.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Ringer F1 Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. I am Kevin Clark, emergency edition. Haven't had one of these in a few months. Mattia Bonanno is out as team principal of Ferrari. Megan Schuster is doing some sort of emergency F1 pod dance. Megan, what's going on, pal?
What is up? I am so ready to talk about Ferrari, to talk about Italians with you. Let's get into it.
Mattia Bonanno, despite being the most Italian human being on the planet, is actually born in Switzerland.
That really blows my mind. Like the glasses alone, I'm like, that is not a Swiss person. That is an Italian person. 1,000%.
That is the most Italian person. The most Italian person for the most Italian team. We're going to get into the Italianness of it all because it all plays into it. We'll also touch on Daniel Ricciardo being officially unveiled as a Red Bull reserve driver. I'm really fascinated by that story. But we will start with what was, I think, equal parts. It's expected, depending on who you talk to, and a surprise, depending on who you talk to. I was just reading Andrew Benson, who said that this was an open secret heading into Abu Dhabi. This was over. But on the other hand, Ferrari said it wasn't going to happen. There was also an open secret, according to the BBC, that Alfa Romeo boss Fred Vasseur is going to be his replacement, although it seemed to be up in the air when you read some of the reports today. But If the open secrets in Abu Dhabi are any indication, that seems to be where everything is trending. This says to me so much, and I have probably 30 minutes of rant in me about where Ferrari is, where it's going, where it has been, and what this says about all of it and how it ties together. But this says so much about where Ferrari thinks Leclerc is going, where Ferrari stands in general. So Bonanno was in charge of the team since the beginning of the 2019 season. He'd been with Ferrari since 1995. He had run a handful of departments before that, the engine department, the technical side of it all. And he had the pace, but he didn't have the reliability. It sounded like when you do deep dives into Ferrari that he tried to change the culture. There was a blame culture in Ferrari that he wanted to turn on its head. And I don't know, maybe Ferrari likes the blame culture. I don't know. It all ties into
how
it's all reflected in the Italian media, all of that stuff. We're going to get into some of the missteps he had this year. But Meg, first impressions.
Yeah, I think throughout the second half, we all knew Ferrari had to change something. I don't think everyone was fully in agreement on what that something necessarily was, whether it was Bonanno himself or someone else within the team, like people more tied directly to strategy decisions they were making or reliability issues. But this team had 9 car retirements out of 44 possible finishes between the two drivers. That's 20% of the time.
Is that good?
I think that's really good is what I'm taking from this. They also scored 15 points or less 6 times throughout the season, which if you look at Red Bull, that only happened twice. And yeah, I mean, by the end of the season, Charles and Carlos were virtually calling their own plays. And it just seemed like a pretty widespread failure. So I guess at some point you have to do something kind of drastic when you have the kind of car that you have and the young drivers that you have. But I don't know, reading up on it today, I'm not entirely convinced that losing Mattia was the right move. But again, I think Ferrari's kind of desperate to do something and to get back to their winning ways. And, you know, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. I will also say, though, that it concerns me that they will now be moving on to their fifth team principal in the last decade, which shows some other maybe institutional failings on their part. But I don't know. We can talk about all of that, too.
I was not surprised that it happened within... Well, let me rephrase that. I would have supported it if it was another team was having these sort of reliability problems, okay? Within the context of Ferrari, as you said, they roll over team principals every year and a half, basically. I think they've had six in the V6 hybrid era, which is ludicrous. They improved their pace in 2020, his second year. They were as much as a second off of the pace with other engine manufacturers. They just didn't have anything. And the fact that they were able to, and listen, I don't have a problem with making him the fall guy on this, but I don't think this is going to solve any of the problems when you think about how much better they got so quickly. To me, the problem was in strategy, and maybe you can go ahead and fix some of that. Maybe you can get a different strategy guy, whatever, and then reliability. And I don't know how much you can put at the feet of the team principal when you're getting that, when you're making that sort of improvement and you're getting that much pace so quickly. I mean, you really got 1 year of that engine and they say he has to go. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But someone had to get fired for Leclerc leading with over 46 points.
Yes.
After the third race of the season. And three races later, Red Bull gets a lead they never lose, which is unprecedented. I mean, the 46 point, I remember we were on this podcast, 46 point lead after three races was already going to be a top 10 comeback in the history of Formula One after three races. And they were undone by their own incompetence and their own strategy problems and their own reliability problems. So yes, someone had to get fired. But I don't think a guy who was trying to change the culture, who had gotten the pace going so well. Did the United States of America just score? I think they did. Yep.
Wow.
Mid-rant.
Huge.
Mid-rant.
Huge.
We're back. No reliability issues here, baby. But, I mean, this to me says so much about the culture of Ferrari. There's a reason that they haven't had a world champion driver since 2007 when Kimi Raikkonen did it.
God, I miss him.
We all do. There's a great piece on the race by Scott Mitchell-Malm. I don't know if you saw it. Basically saying that the way Ferrari is set up, big Ringer guy, by the way. Big Shea Serrano guy. He's probably crestfallen about Shea's exit. But the way that Ferrari is set up, where Christian Horner is the guy. There are people above him, but there's no meddling. Certainly not meddling to this degree. Toto Wolff is, you know, a shareholder in the Mercedes team. He's locked in, okay? Like, he's been there since 2013, but he's also just ingrained in the team, ingrained in the culture. Ferrari has a CEO above Binotto who replaced Camilleri, who left due to COVID complications, it sounds like, at the end of 2020. So, running Ferrari right now is a guy named John Elkman. And what it sounds like is that Camilleri, who was the CEO under Elkman, who was the chairman, had a great relationship with the power structure at Ferrari. And then he leaves due to COVID complications in late 2020. And Binotto just doesn't have any support. And I kind of feel like in an F1 team where you need stability, where you need a 4 or 5 year project just to see it through, I kind of feel like you cannot, and I saw a bunch of people make this point, you can't treat it like a normal business. And Ferrari, because they are a car company, and Lord knows they're not the only one on the grid, but they treat it like any other business. They listen, and I saw this point brought up too, they listen to the media. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to the media. I'm in the media. We don't know what we're talking about. Don't do it. We don't understand what's actually going on with the engines. We don't know. But then when that happens, it gets reflected back on the team. That's the culture of Ferrari. And I was talking about, you know, I probably brought it up five times in this podcast, the amount, the, you know, the culture problems and all the anecdotes about Ferrari and the, you know, one of the guys who designed one of the best cars in history went over to Ferrari and drew everything up and said, here's how our car is going to be going. And then when they got out there on the track, he said, why isn't this happening? And this team said, we thought, you know, we do something else. It's like, wait, what? I drew the car. Like, that was in the 80s, but like, not much has changed. That seems to be the culture of Ferrari. It's political. It's up and down. It's, you know, violent shift from sort of one idea to the next. And this just feels like one of those.
It feels like too many cooks in the kitchen. And it also just feels so indicative of having the wrong internal hierarchical strategy. Because like, if we looked at Ferrari like a football team, and they're obviously not, but any NFL team that is going through five head coaches or five general managers in a 10-year span, like, you can't look at the head coaches as being at fault. You look at the team owner and you look at everyone above the head coach who is making these larger organizational decisions. And yeah, I mean, at some point you have to give somebody the time to make the kinds of changes that they want to make. And whether that will be Vasser, if he does end up coming to Ferrari, it sounds like he has a good relationship with Charles Leclerc. Maybe that has something to do with all of this. I don't know. But at this point, I would be a little fearful taking that job, just knowing the kind of cycle you're going into and the high expectations. And like you said, the Italian media has so much power over Ferrari. It's a little bit wild. You know, I was trying to think, have you ever heard of Mercedes referencing the German media or Red Bull saying, oh, you know, the British media? I mean, outside of Christian Horner's Sky Sports boycott for 1 week.
Christian Horner is the British media. That's the problem. He's just a media member.
Yeah. And then I guess he does have too much power. But it is wild how often you hear, you know, Ferrari critics and Ferrari strategists and people referencing the Italian media and how closely they're paying attention to it. It's a very, very toxic environment, it seems. And I don't know what they'll ultimately decide to do going forward.
Yeah. And listen, I've changed my mind a bunch. I think there was a time, especially in mid-year, where I probably was on this episode on the show and saying, everybody out. And then the more you think about it, the more research you do and the more perspective you get on it, you realize that F1 is not one person. It's not, this is not football. This is not, I mean, like, listen, you can draw parallels wherever you want from Ferrari to Manchester United or Ferrari to Texas, University of Texas football, where it's just this big behemoth that cannot get right because there's too many cultural issues, right? We see that all the time in global sport. But I think F1 is just more complicated than that. And I think, the more I read about him trying to change the culture, that actually probably was a force for good. Let's talk about Leclerc. You brought him up. So, boy, this was a tough year, and we got I can't stop thinking about the listener question in the last month of the season, basically saying, is Leclerc finally broken? Because he had such an optimistic attitude in the beginning of the season, and I didn't see that at the end, and I don't blame him for seeing it at the end. Let's go through it, okay? Engine failures while leading in Spain and Azerbaijan. Then a strategy failure in Monaco. Then more race management errors in Silverstone and Hungary, okay? And that cost him two more wins, probably. Mm-hmm. The second half of the season, reading from the BBC here, Red Bull got all the advantages, never relinquished it. So all of the advantages that Ferrari had in the first half, they squandered. And then to make matters worse, they just didn't improve their car when Red Bull did. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was a complete disaster. But I also want to read some other media reports that basically hint that part of this was that Leclerc understands now, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, about how teams are now built around the drivers rather than vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. Verstappen is Red Bull. Hamilton is Mercedes. Ferrari wants to be Leclerc, and probably vice versa. Even throwing out some of the awful things that happened to him this year as far as strategy goes and reliability, I think he likes his place there. But there were some rumblings in reputable F1 media today that Leclerc's team may have been saying, okay, what kind of track are we on here? Because Leclerc is going to spend the bulk of his prime in red, and they want to make sure they're on the right track. And I think it was Andrew Benson at the BBC who also said that basically that they don't want to lose him to Mercedes in a few years. If he starts developing as a driver to be a kind of a Max-esque driver and a seat opens there. Well, also, who knows what happens with George there, whether or not Mercedes pivots entirely to George, whatever. But do you think Leclerc's team ordered, so to speak, the code red on management and said, if we're going to stay here, if we're going to be happy here for the long term, this needs to change?
I don't know that they would have directly ordered the code red, but I'm sure they made their discomforts known. And I just say that judging by who it seems is currently the leading candidate to come in and replace Binotto, which is, like you said, Frederick Vasseur, who is currently the team principal for Alfa Romeo. He and Charles worked together in 2018 when Charles had his F1 debut at Sauber. It seems like they have a good working relationship. And what I find, I think, most interesting about this potential hire is that Vasseur has said that he believes in there being like a true number one driver on a team and there being a hierarchy within that driver room, which would, of course, in this case be Leclerc. Which I'm sure Charles would love to have and to love, you know, love to have that support and not have to worry about fighting with Carlos Sainz out there on the track. What I find interesting about that is what that might mean for Carlos going forward and his happiness and that, you know, coming over to the team, I think he had every expectation of being able to battle Charles as much as possible. And he's, you know, a young competitive driver who wants to do that. And I don't know that these visions are going to coalesce very well if this hire ends up happening.
Agree on a couple of things. Number one, I don't think they actually care about Carlos Sainz's happiness relative to
true
everything else.
Okay? Yeah.
Number two, I agree. The fact that the Alpha boss would slide on over kind of a GM LeBron vibe there as far as Clutch taking over the organization. Okay. Yeah. Just something to watch. What I will say is that for any team, and this is true, we mentioned those kind of world sport teams that can just never get out of their own way. It can always get worse. It can always get worse. And if they're going to, I don't think Fred is going to have a team meeting and say, hey guys, we're going back to blame culture. I'm just saying if that's the default and they were trying to change that, it will go pretty quickly. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I think there can be a power vacuum. We don't know. I mean, part of the problem with the starts and stops is you bring in X amount of people to be your guys and then they have to leave. I mean, I remember, and this is, you know, I actually do think that NFL teams, as far as personnel in the front office, are a little bit analogous to F1 teams and that you end up, you know, it's dozens of people. It's people who are in extremely specified roles. And then the next regime may not even need those roles at all. So what do you do with those people? I remember Dave Gettleman, who was the GM of the Giants and the Panthers, much more successful with the Panthers. And I was talking to him one time and he didn't fire anybody. He didn't fire anybody. And he said that the mistake that every team makes is they start to bring in their own staff. And it really does cost them about 6 to 10 months. Mm. And that's any big organization. You're set back 6 to 10 months because it's not only people coming in and hiring them, but then it's learning on the job and you just don't get clicking. So you try to make those people your people, then it becomes square pegs and round holes. Okay. And I'm not pretending to know the ins and outs of Ferrari. I'm just saying the more you turn over everything, the bigger the problems you have. And so if Binotto was trying to change the culture there, stopping midstream it can be very, very, very detrimental. This is my one takeaway. I want to repeat it. It can always get worse.
I think that's true. I think, and I think what you said about setbacks is really important too, in that they still have a very competitive car. And you would assume that coming into this offseason, you know, it's only going to improve. Hopefully they kind of figure out what it takes to continue development throughout the season and to keep pace with a Red Bull who is very, very good at things like that, and Mercedes too. And also like hard to lose Binotto from that aspect, because like you said, of his history with that side of things. But also it's like, you might be asking for a driver fight on your hands if
Yes.
Carlos becomes especially disgruntled by this system. If he feels like, you know, Charles is becoming the favorite, if whatever, like we have seen these, you know, these guys can be very sensitive to things like that. Even somebody as relatively even keeled as Sergio Perez by the end of this year was saying like, I'm not carrying water for Max anymore. I'm not doing it. And he was basically brought in to do exactly that. So then are you just sowing more discord within your team when previously it seemed like Charles and Carlos were semi-happy working together? I don't know. I'll be very, very curious to see if these flames are able to be put out or not.
Okay. There was one point I saw in the Scott Mitchell piece that I want to point out, which is that there's only really one time in the history of Ferrari where the team was shielded from the political mess, that the political mess did not infiltrate the team, the cars, the paddock. And that was when Michael Schumacher had that thing rolling, and that was spearheaded by Ross Brawn.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Schumacher is obviously a singular force in the history of F1, but it's up to Leclerc to be good enough to change everything, because it's not going to happen from the political side. It's not going to happen. It's up to Leclerc to have drives that are good enough to where everything is propelled forward, and then kind of that gets reflected into the paddock, and then the car gets built in the same way. Like, you have to perform well enough for politics not to matter. I know that sounds completely insane. You know, I was talking to someone who have a great young quarterback, and I was saying, I was making fun of some crappy NFL team to one of their employees maybe a year ago. And I was like, you know, they don't spend on medical, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, we don't do any of that either. And nobody notices because we got the quarterback. We're a bad organization and we got the quarterback. Okay. And if you think about it that way, they have the capability to have Leclerc with a good car who have the pace and the reliability to make politics matter significantly less. And that's why I do think you listen to Leclerc's voice, but I would stop short of firing someone just over that.
I would too. And I think your point is well taken, especially knowing that, you know, Charles asked for this. Like, his goal in Formula One was to get to Ferrari and to drive for Ferrari. And if that is your goal, you know what comes with it. You know the pressures, you know the media attention, you know that you're going to have to deal with some internal politics, and he has to realize that, like, this is on his shoulders now. And especially if they do end up bringing in Frederick, like, that's a big bet on Charles and a big bet on their relationship. And yeah, he has to make it worth it.
All right, let's get out of here with Daniel Ricciardo news. Spanners and I hit this at the end of the Abu Dhabi recap about what this does as far as just the vibe in the paddock. He's not going to do 24 races. That's something he said a long time ago. He just wants to find himself. He just wants to hang out, see what he likes, see what he doesn't like. I think this puts pressure on Sergio to get along with Max, not the other way around. I think there's people who are saying, well, this is going to say, hey, Max and Sergio, be nice to each other. No, it doesn't. No. Max gets to do whatever he wants. Like, Max, I was going to joke, they'll put anybody in the car, but they need their super license points. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It's true.
They'll find anybody with their super license points and just put him in the car ahead of Checo if Max doesn't like him to the point that it all erodes. So curious what you think about this. Curious what you think of the move. So basically, it sounded like the Mercedes talks were very real, very close. They plateaued a little bit. They didn't progress. And then Red Bull came in and made a more serious offer.
Yeah. I was reading a little bit today about Daniel's comments on it and kind of why he ended up signing with Red Bull. And it does sound like a little bit of a nostalgia and comfort factor, which I found very endearing and very sweet that, you know, when Mercedes kind of stalled and things, that he just decided that, you know, there are some things that are more important and going back to Red Bull, a place where I know everyone and feel comfortable and feel like I can do my best work, seemed important to him. So that was good. I personally am really excited about this. I was always disappointed when Daniel left for Red Bull, and think, absolutely, you know, some of his moves have been fairly questionable since then. So I'm glad to see him back. I agree with you though, that it puts a lot of pressure on Checo, knowing that he is back there and waiting. And I am curious, I would be curious to know what Checo's honest reaction was to this signing, because especially given some of the tensions with Max at the end of the year, I'm curious if this is a move that's meant to kind of like tell him what's up and that, you know, you kind of have to fall in line and do what we're asking you to do, or if maybe he doesn't see it that way and maybe just is happy to have Daniel in the paddock. I honestly don't know, but it will be very curious once the season starts up and if there are any tensions, what comes of it.
Megan Schuster, thanks for hopping on for an emergency podcast. We're going to be back next week. We'll do an awards thing. Let's do it. Let's do the awards thing.
Let's do it.
And then we're going to have, we'll unveil some sort of off-season format pretty soon once the news stops, and we'll see you then. Thank you to Erica Cervantes for her help. She's been watching the USA game for the past 30 minutes, but Meg and I have both been jealous of her. We'll get back to it. This has been the Ringer F1 Show on the Ringer Podcast Network.